Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. I'm joined in the studio today by local author Patrick Nolan. His latest book is called CIA Rogues and the Killing of the Kennedys, How and Why U.S. Agents Conspired to Assassinate JFK and RFK. And the foreword is written by Dr. Henry Lee. Patrick Nolan is a forensic historian who has dedicated his life to uncovering truths surrounding the JFK, MLK, and RFK assassinations of the 1960s. He's been a journalist, a television news producer, and professor at Hofstra University and St. John's University. He lives with his wife in West Hartford, Connecticut. And he joins me today on the show to discuss his book on the Kennedy assassinations. Patrick Nolan, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you, Cheryl.
Patrick, you wrote the book CIA Rogues and the Killings of the Kennedys, How and Why U.S. Agents Conspired to Assassinate JFK and RFK, which came out in November of 2015. Could you tell us a little bit about what motivated you to write the book?
Well, I was always concerned since the 60s, very concerned about why these assassinations had taken place and why the official stories, in many ways, didn't add up. I also had a personal connection. I had seen John Kennedy when he was president in 1962, came to Waterbury, gave a speech. And the whole family went down, and it was a big event. And being Irish Catholic from Waterbury, we were so thrilled to have this person in the White House. And then, of course, when he was assassinated, it was devastating. And I read everything I could on it. And this is back in 63. And so since then, and I've continued to read as much as I can. And I've found that the discrepancies are overwhelming. And then when Bobby was killed when I was in college, by the way, I had actually met Bobby when he campaigned in Waterbury in 66 in the fall. And I was one of those kids that reached up and shook his hand as the car drove by.
Oh, wow.
See the documentary films. And it was great. And we thought he would be the next president. And then when he was cut down in June of 68, we started really thinking, wait a minute, what is happening here? And as it turns out, in my thesis, in my book, is basically that Bobby wanted to find out also who killed his brother, John. And that was the main reason he ran for president. And then he was hit by the same people. And the evidence all points to that.
And we'll talk about who those people were in a little bit. So you are a forensic historian. Can you just tell people what that means?
People are familiar with forensic scientists and forensic accountants. A forensic historian is someone who studies the past, primarily crimes, and studies the physical evidence to try and find out what really happened, because they know that the past in many ways determines the future. If we better understand the past, we can make the present and the future better. So a forensic historian is one who really wants to know and better understand the past through the study of forensics.
And in terms of JFK, the government, of course, says that it was the lone gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald. Can you tell us a little bit about why you think it wasn't him?
Well, the evidence shows that he didn't have a motive. In fact, the evidence shows that he wasn't even on the sixth floor at the time of the Texas School Book Depository at the time the assassination took place. Witnesses saw him in the lunchroom just minutes before and a minute after. That is not what an assassin would have done.
Yeah.
He was sitting there, they saw him. So his whole life, Oswald's life, if you really study it, he was in intelligence himself, military intelligence. He went in the service at 17. He spoke fluent Russian. There's only one place you could learn fluent Russian at 17 that I can think of.
And that, where was that?
That is a pretty good school.
The Defense Language
Institute? It was the Defense Language Institute, as we've been able to put the pieces of the puzzle together. The Defense Language Institute trains young soldiers, Marines, Navy men, in various languages. We call them target languages. And their job is to intercept military communications. Tanks, missile sites, airplanes, ships, any kind of foreign or military communications, translate it. Some of the men break codes. So their job is really to work for the National Security Agency. Clearly, Oswald was a Marine working for the National Security Agency, which is connected with the whole spy and intelligence network. He was assigned to a top secret base in Japan, CIA base at Atsugi, Japan, which is the base where they had the U-2 spy flights flying out of. They were supersonic, high-altitude planes that could photograph a license plate from 90,000 feet.
Wow.
Yeah. But also they could picking up sound. They could pick up any communications going on in Russia.
So here we have this Lee Harvey Oswald being actually an insider in the NSA. And after Kennedy was shot, he says, "I'm a patsy." So he didn't really know he was being set up for this.
Right. He was an unwitting fall guy. He was a patsy. And he said he was. And the evidence shows that the intelligence community at that time did have a program of creating unwitting fall guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was called MKUltra. It started in the 50s. And by the early 60s, they had perfected it. Actually, the goal was to create a Manchurian candidate, someone who could be programmed to go out and kill and not remember. It didn't work 100%. It was unreliable. They used too much drugs or hypnotism. The subject would be a vegetable. If they didn't use enough, he would be too unpredictable. So it didn't work. But then they hit on the idea of having the unwitting fall guy, who was drugged and hypnotized, be the fall guy, but use expert marksmen on the sidelines. And that's what we saw in Dallas, and that's what we saw in the Bobby Kennedy murder in the Ambassador Hotel.
You've talked about Lee Harvey Oswald. Let's talk about Sirhan Sirhan a bit. You're saying he was mind-controlled?
Yes.
Yeah.
The symptoms that we've been able to identify of MKUltra mind control would be sudden change in behavior. And first of all, before that, he was missing for 3 months, right before the assassination of Bobby. Where he was those 3 months, no one knows. They just can't determine it, which is very odd.
Yeah, very interesting.
But it would take those 3 months to do hypnoprogramming of someone. But anyway, you come back, you're irritable, depressed, for no reason at all. Mm-hmm. His views had changed on things. He had, besides mood swings, at times he was in a stupor for no reason. Rapid speech. All these symptoms of programming did start to appear. He has no memory of the assassination. He has no memory of writing some notebooks that they used to show premeditation, the courts.
And weren't there some people working to get him out of jail?
He's had various lawyers over the years. Early on, there was a Dr. Edward Simpson who tried to, actually, he wanted to deprogram him. He wanted to break inside the barrier to bring back the memories that weren't there. And he was told to stop. He was at San Quentin Prison, and he was ordered not to deal with Sirhan anymore, and then he left the job. And since then, I've heard that there has been another group more recently, much more recently, the current attorney, Dr. William Pepper, who has tried to do the same thing and break through and retrieve these lost memories. But clearly he was framed. The gun that he used, there's evidence in the barrel that there were blanks. Witnesses saw two other gunmen firing. The sound recording shows 14 shots. Sirhan's gun was only an 8-shot revolver. Plus, Bobby was hit in the back of the head and in the back. Sirhan was like 3 or 4 feet in front. So nothing matches up.
So where was the mainstream media in all this, the corporate media? I mean, they didn't report any of that, did they?
You know, the whole investigation was controlled by two LAPDs who were also CIA people. They had careers in the CIA in Latin America. Manny Pena and Hank Hernandez, these two men, not coincidentally, I'm sure, ended up running the investigation for LAPD.
Right,
and so they controlled the media. Yeah.
But now you, as an independent researcher, have come up with solid evidence that contradicts the Warren Commission. Why can't the corporate media be doing that?
Well, there was an Operation Mockingbird during that time, and planned by CIA Director Richard Helms at that time and James Angleton, the head of counterintelligence, to plant CIA people, scores of them, throughout the media. Operation Mockingbird was set up by the CIA to place CIA operatives in the media and to make sure that stories that were coming out did not conflict with the official version on both the John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy assassinations. So there are a number of other reasons that the media doesn't run conspiracy-type stories. In fact, I have 6 quick reasons. Can I give you them?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
They're naive in many ways. If you're under age 54, you weren't born when John Kennedy was killed. You weren't even born yet. People born after 1963, their teachers really taught them the official version, and they had no reason to question it because they didn't hear the alternative points of view. The second reason is many of the media were brainwashed by the CIA, and through that Operation Mockingbird and whatever, people like Bill O'Reilly and a number of writers and journalists, they have been brainwashed. I really believe that. They won't deviate from the official view. Some are twisted, meaning that they feel it's unpatriotic to say that the government would kill its own leaders, the rogues within the government, and we don't want to appear unpatriotic. Then there are some that are scared to write against the official view because they don't want to lose their jobs. They don't want to get fired. Even Ben Bradley, editor of the Washington Post, said, I didn't write much about it because I didn't think it would help my career, meaning that he was worried about his reputation. So they're scared. And then some are ignorant. In other words, they're good writers. They're communications majors. They go into journalism, but they don't know history. And that's a big problem. I think if you have to study history to be a journalist.
Yes, they might study history, but what they're learning might be a false history.
But you might learn some principles that there is such a thing as false history by studying history. You know, and so they're ignorant. And then there's another group that journalists, they're apathetic. It's like, who cares? How does that affect us? And they don't realize that the past does affect us because it determines in many ways how we're going to plan the future.
Yeah.
Okay. And then finally, there are the ones that are greedy and they simply know the truth, but they know that they can make more money by printing the official version. So they continue the Warren Commission myths.
And of course, as you mentioned, many of them are CIA.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm sure they're still there. It's an important business that they're in. The CIA, how do they operate? They do three things. First, they monitor, then they infiltrate, then they penetrate. Monitor means they watch groups. They watch Muslim groups. They watch the media. They watch any group that might be an issue. Then they infiltrate. Infiltrate means they become members of that group. They probably members of the 9/11 group.
I've seen that in our local groups.
Right. They're, sure. They're working for the government, CIA, or intelligence agencies. Mm-hmm. They're in, say, the 9/11 group, whatever. And they monitor, they infiltrate, and then they penetrate. Penetrate means that they take over the group. So they lead a part of the group, lead them to where they want them to go. And where they want them to go many times is probably to be destroyed, to destroy them.
Yeah, I've actually seen that in our local peace groups.
It's real big. It was called Operation Chaos in the 60s. They tried to destroy the peace groups, the civil rights groups, the black groups.
Yeah, and I think it's very effective. I have to say it is. And any kind of activist group, in order to be successful, needs to understand that this is happening and develop some skills to deal with it. And that's hard. So tell us, who did it? You think it's the same people in both situations, JFK, RFK? Who did it?
Well, the people that have the means, the motive, and the opportunity, more than anybody, is this what I call the CIA rogues. And that would be Richard Helms, James Angleton, David Phillips, E. Howard Hunt. Those four key people that were active in the 50s through the 70s. They had help from the mob. They had an alliance with the mob. They were using the mob, Johnny Roselli, to help overthrow or assassinate Fidel Castro in Cuba. They also had help from Santo Traficante in Miami. And, of course, Carlos Mazzello in New Orleans. So that alliance with the mob and their own people, you could see that the fingerprints of intelligence are all over both cases, the case of Oswald and the case of Sirhan Sirhan. And Sirhan Sirhan, there's a military intelligence report that we found after the assassination that was written before the assassination of a background report on Sirhan Sirhan. Wonder why would the CIA have a background report on CIA before the assassination?
Right.
You know, there's no reason.
Sense.
Yeah. You know, and then we know about Dr. William Bryan has admitted to friends and colleagues. He was a CIA programmer hypnotist. He was a psychotherapist. But he has told friends that he did program Sirhan Sirhan. So we have that evidence.
Wow.
And then, of course, I just told you about the two CIA people who worked at LAPD who ran the investigation. So there's three links right there. In the Oswald case, he learned Russian through the National Security Agency before, and then it was a fake defection. The fake defection to Russia after he left the Marine Corps was another program set up by James Angleton, whom I just mentioned, who was head of counterintelligence. One of his main goals was to try and get people into Russia to dig up intelligence, and Oswald was one of those people. So he didn't defect. He was a fake defector. We also know that he met with David Phillips, the head of the Western Hemisphere, David Phillips, in 63, September 63. And this was in Dallas, and he was seen by Anthony Vecchiana, who was the head of Alpha 66, trying to overthrow Castro. Why would David Phillips be meeting with Oswald in Dallas 2 months before the assassination? Mm-hmm. So there are so many links here, where you could see that the rogues within the CIA ran both assassinations. All of Oswald's friends were connected with the CIA. David Ferry in New Orleans, Dennis Offstein in Dallas. even in Russia, his close friend was Dr. Alexei Davison, who was the head of one of the key spy rings of the CIA in Moscow during the early 60s, late 50s. Guy Bannister in New Orleans. George de Morenschild, best friend of Lee Harvey Oswald.
Mm-hmm.
We know he was CIA.
Didn't he wind up getting killed in the end, too?
Well, in 77, the House Select Committee on Assassinations was calling him to come because they wanted to talk to him. And they went to his house, and he was found dead. They said it was a suicide. His wife said it wasn't a suicide. She wasn't home, but she said he never would have done it. He was killed. He had a bullet hole in his mouth.
Yeah, and I know you mentioned that David Ferry, and I was reading another book about Barry and the boys. David Ferry was very much involved in drug running, and the CIA was involved in that, too. So it all kind of...
Well, he was a pilot, so he played a key role in helping the mob and the CIA fly people and drugs. And he knew Oswald when Oswald was 16. Oswald was in the Civil Air Patrol at 16, and his leader was David Ferry.
Yeah.
Then they met up again 7 years later when Oswald was 23 in Dallas.
It's a small circle there, yeah. You know, tell me, we talked about this de Morenschild dying. There were a lot of people, I understand, that died mysteriously around the Kennedy assassination. Can you tell us more about that?
That's really important, and it's key witnesses during the time of the Warren Commission was studying the case. Mm-hmm. Before they issued the report, witnesses were turning up dead. And then when the House Select Committee started to meet in the late 70s, more people started turning up. Scores of people, they looked at 100 cases of witnesses who died, 30 of them violently, you know, through gunshot throughout that period. And there's only one group that I could think of, the mob, with the intelligence agencies working together to keep the stories from getting out. Oswald was the first witness killed.
And then what do you think of Jack Ruby?
He was a mobster, and he was ordered. Mm-hmm. You got to take this one out. And, of course, if you defy an order, you're dead. So you really don't have a choice.
And then he dies of cancer. Do you think that that was an induced cancer, or do we have any evidence of that?
Well, some people have said that. You know, in my mind, it was in 67, well, January 67. They definitely wanted to silence him. Because he wasn't happy. He did know something had happened and that something was going on. And he did tell people that there was a much larger conspiracy than people had any idea. But he didn't give details. So I'm sure they wanted him silenced. But I don't know if the cancer was there or not. Yeah.
Because I know I read the book, Dr. Mary's Monkey, and that just blew me away, the connection between Lee Harvey Oswald and cancer. You know what I mean? Yeah, it was very weird, the whole thing. So, and I know they were working on trying to be able to create cancer in people, according to that book anyway.
The drugs that we know for sure that came out in the 70s House Select Committee reports, they had developed drugs that could simulate a heart attack. But you would really, they were murdering people. But it would look as if they had a heart attack. That drug, we know they used that drug. They developed it and they had the capability of doing that.
Maybe you can speak to the latest thing with these documents that were supposed to be released 25 years after the 1992 congressional orders to do so. I know they've withheld a lot of them. They've redacted some of them. What are your thoughts on that? And do we really need them? Do we have enough information without them?
You know, it would be fantastic if the redactions weren't there. Mm-hmm. Redactions are the parts that are blacked out. And redactions are massive. They're blacking out entire pages. I mean, I don't think it's right. But quite frankly, anything that was really critical would have been destroyed. And in fact, we know Helms and Angleton, the CIA people I mentioned earlier, in 73, they destroyed most of their documents. Now, you have to understand one thing. A lot of the operations, they didn't put into writing. So either they didn't put into writing or it was destroyed in 73 when they were leaving office. And anything that's left over is great to have, though, because if you connect dots and you look at some of these documents and you know something already, you can definitely make connections that will bring out the truth.
So for that reason alone, it would be good to get your hands on those.
Yeah.
And now I understand that some of them that they've withheld might be released in the coming year.
Right. I've heard that the president said, work on these and get them out. He gave them another 6 months till April to get the rest of the documents out and unredact documents.
So I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens then. So, and you're saying that these four guys, Angleton and Helm and them, were responsible for Bobby Kennedy too.
Absolutely. I mean, he ran for president, Bobby, in my mind, and a lot of others. Walter Sheridan, his family, were very close to Bobby while he was a former Justice Department official. And he said, we talked, and Bobby really suspected the CIA, and he was going to run But he couldn't tell anyone unless he was president, because only in that level would he then be able to do something about it. And that was his goal for running, to nail these people.
You have one of your chapters in your book, chapter two, is called The Sociopathy Test. Can you speak to that?
Right. Dr. Robert Hare, who is a PhD in psychology, and he can develop the system for being able to diagnose clinically someone who is a sociopath. You know, we've heard of psychopaths. Sociopath is the same thing. The only difference being, some scientists believe that you become this way, a sociopath, through your genes. You inherit it. And those people would say that you're a psychopath. The ones who don't think, you don't get it through your genes, you inherit these horrible characteristics, would be from your family situation, not from your genes, but from your social situation, whether it's your family or your friends. They would call you a sociopath. So a sociopath and a psychopath are the same thing. Mm-hmm. Depends on whether you inherit, if you believe it was inherited through your genes or you picked it up from your family upbringing.
From your environment,
Yeah, your environment.
And so how does that relate to the Kennedy assassination?
It relates because in trying to understand the motive of Richard Helms, who was head of the CIA in 66 to 73, but was a very top, high-level person in 63, and James Angleton, we have to try and figure out their psychology. Why would someone do this? And it turns out that we could see quite readily that their motives were power, self-preservation, and rabid anti-communism. And they felt that Kennedy, both Kennedys, were starting to try and make peace with Cuba, with the Russians, with North Vietnam. This is a fact. John planned to pull 1,000 troops, even signed a document to pull 1,000 troops from Vietnam. And this is right before he died. He was opening up avenues to try and make peace with North Vietnam through the French. He was trying to make peace with Castro. He was calling off the CIA to stop the raids on his country. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, he was trying to improve relations with Russia in many areas. Mm-hmm. So in the mind of the military, especially the intelligence agencies, rather, he was considered soft on communism. And this, in their minds, was going to lead to the end of our country as we know it. And he had to be stopped. So it was power, self-preservation, and rabid anti-communism that motivated Helms and Angleton and Phillips and E. Howard Hunt. You have to look into deeper into their psychology. So by studying their media comments, studying the biography and the autobiographies of these men, you can really develop kind of a profile of what they were like. And then when you match it up with Dr. Hare's sociopath characteristics, the match is amazing.
I'm glad that you put a chapter in there on that, because I don't hear that often about that angle of it.
Yeah.
It's interesting, what motivates them. Your last chapter in the book is about conclusions, and maybe you can tell us a little bit about what conclusions you drew from your research.
In conclusion, well, we have to learn from the past. We have to bring justice and truth to the table, and that means justice for Sirhan, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, he had a parole hearing a year and a half ago. A man stood up who was one of the five people that were wounded when Bobby was shot. And he said, Sirhan couldn't have done it. I was there. He was in the wrong position.
Did they say he had a gun and was he shooting?
He did have a gun and he was shooting. But this person, Paul Schrade, he's 90 years old now. And he stated, no, I was right there. Sirhan was in the wrong location, too far away, at the wrong distance. Uh-huh. All the shots that killed Bobby were from half an inch away. There were powder burns on the back of his head. Wow. Someone put the gun right into the back of his head from behind. Sirhan was where you are, okay, 4 feet away. But the parole hearing personnel just threw that out, and they denied parole.
You've studied this. You've written about it. Why is this important to America and to Americans, and why should young people care about this?
Again, the past determines the future in many ways. So you need to understand the past to be able to make the future safe and better for yourself and for your kids and grandkids. That's really important. And also to bring justice, like I said, for Sirhan and the family of Oswald. And it affects our relations with the world. We want to be known as a country that is fair and honest and truthful. You know, that we, sure, we make mistakes, but we can correct them and we can move on. And
I see it also as they got away with that. They got away with those. And they got away with Martin Luther King. Do you see that as the same people?
I do. I've really studied that quite a bit. And James Earl Ray, he's the same as Oswald and Sirhan. He was definitely framed, fall guy. And they decided, the agency, the rogues, decided to do away with Martin Luther King because he was going to join the Bobby Kennedy campaign. He made it known.
Ah.
He told his people, we've got to help Bobby, he said. Yeah. This is in April. April 4th, he was killed. at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis. And there were witnesses that saw James Earl Ray a couple of blocks from the rooming house at the time he was supposed to have been shooting. Other witnesses saw someone who didn't resemble Ray at all in the bushes with smoke coming out of the bushes, which had fired a rifle. And so there's so many discrepancies that you could clearly see, especially if you just study the life of James Earl Ray. At the end, when he was picked up, he was told plead guilty, because if you don't, you're going to get the electric chair. Of course, he pleaded guilty. Then a week later, he changed his mind. Yeah. This is crazy. He said, I wanted to go through the whole trial and everything, but nothing ever came of that.
The only way they could get away with this is because the media is controlled by them. Otherwise, I think we would have more of the truth. But I wanted to ask you, how has writing this book and being, quote, a conspiracy theorist impacted your life, if it has, maybe?
You know, I'm a conspiracy theorist, but if you open up my book on the very first page, it clearly states that I believe there was a conspiracy in the Robert Kennedy, you know, and John Kennedy assassinations. I'm not one of these people who believes, you know, that the moon landing was fake. I don't believe that Elvis is still alive. I'm a historian, and I know, like, for example, Abraham Lincoln says, oh, okay, he was shot by John Wilkes Booth. Five people were hanged. I mean, there was a conspiracy there. Yeah.
Right.
Conspiracies have happened.
Yeah.
And for someone to say, oh, he's a conspiracy theorist, it's, you sound like you're lumping all of these things together, and you can't do that.
Right. And we know that the CIA created that term to keep people from questioning the Warren Commission, so that people would think, oh, they're loony or nutty.
Yeah.
Do you know what the polls show about how many people don't believe what the Warren Commission has told us?
Oh, it's more than half believe that the Warren Commission was a myth.
Well, Lexa, and I understand you're going to be giving a talk in January at the West Hartford Library. Can you tell us the details of that?
I'm speaking January 16th at the Noah Webster Library in Blueback, West Hartford. It's at 7 p.m., and I'm hoping that we get a good crowd so that we can do some question and answer. I'll bring some books.
Okay, so great. Again, that's January 16th at 7 p.m. at the West Hartford Main Library in downtown in Blueback. Well, I want to thank you again for joining me on the show. Patrick Nolan can get his book, which I would recommend. It's called CIA Rogues and the Killing of the Kennedys, How and Why U.S. Agents Conspired to Assassinate JFK and RFK. So again, thank you, Patrick Nolan, for being on the show.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. Good to be here.
And again, you are just listening to an interview with forensic historian and author Patrick Nolan, discussing his book, CIA Rogues and the Killing of the Kennedys, How and Why U.S. Agents Conspired to Assassinate JFK and RFK. Since this show is dedicated primarily to 9/11 truth, I do have to make the following comments on a point of disagreement with Patrick Nolan. In the preface of his book, he states the following. In 1969, man landed on the moon. In 1977, Elvis died. In 2001, the United States was attacked by terrorists. The 9/11 assaults did not, in any way, shape, or form, involve the CIA. In contrast to these facts, there are conspiracy theorists who mistakenly believe that the moon landing was faked, that Elvis lives, and that 9/11 was an inside job. Now, I get what he's trying to do here, to show that he doesn't believe in every conspiracy theory, but that some conspiracies really do exist and occur. So the moon landing and Elvis aside, the official account of 9/11 is itself a conspiracy theory. And the government has never given any evidence to support its claim that Osama bin Laden and the 19 alleged hijackers had anything to do with 9/11. Rex Toom of the FBI even said so. In 2006, when asked by a reporter from Muckraker magazine why Osama bin Laden was not wanted for 9/11 on his FBI wanted page, Rex Toom replied, because we have no hard evidence linking Osama bin Laden to 9/11. After our interview today, we discussed 9/11, and I gave Patrick some info about it. My hope is that he'll use his research skills to investigate 9/11, and that one day, in the near future, he'll come on the show and discuss it. And just for the record, I don't think 9/11 was an inside job. I think it was an inside-outside job. And this concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening. Power to the people.